This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a special edition of Washington Watch today. We're looking back at a lecture recently hosted at the Family Research Council with our good friend Todd Starnes, Fox News radio show host. And he was talking about his newest book, The Deplorables' Guide to Making America Great Again. Now, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. And if you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me, at T. Perkins. For now, let's listen to what Todd had to say recently as he spoke at the Family Research Council about his newest book, The Deplorables' Guide to Making America Great Again.
It really is an honor to be here with you as we travel across the country on our deplorable tour. And it's exciting to be back in Washington, D.C. Very busy week here in the nation's capital. And we'll be talking about some of those big issues a little bit later on. But I just want to say thank you to the Family Research Council. You guys have stayed the course, and you have been a beacon of light to the conservative movement in our great nation. And you have helped equip families and churches with the tools they need to fight the culture war. And so I just want to say thank you as a supporter of FRC. Your work is incredibly important in our nation. And before we begin, though, I do want to also invite you folks to follow us on Facebook, Todd Starnes FNC, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Todd Starnes. And we have a pretty awesome website where you can find all of our information at toddstarnes.com. Now, many of you who are watching online may not know who I am, so you might detect a little bit of a Southern accent. A lot of people say that I talk funny, that I drawl, but I just tell people I'm from the South and we like to savor our vowels, so we just hold on to them for a little bit. But I'm originally from Memphis, Tennessee, and I still, even though I've been in New York City for about, 13 years now, I still take my tea sweet, my chicken fried, and my biscuits buttered. I still haven't gotten used to bagels, but I'm working on it. So I'm one of those people, though, that President Obama did talk about in 2007, one of those folks who clings to his gun and clings to his religion, and I'm one of those people that Hillary Clinton talked about in just about last year, 2016, when she called folks like you and me deplorables. And I am still, and I always do this, I'm still proud to call myself a gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable son of a Baptist. And not bitter, not blessed, and I have some difficult news for Hillary Clinton today. She called us irredeemable, but I believe many of us here in this room and watching online are in fact redeemed. And this is not a time for a church sermon, but we'll do that later. I really felt like to cover the American liberal, I needed to live in their natural habitat. And that is why I moved to Brooklyn, New York. And I've lived there for quite some time. It's sort of like being on the mission field. My neighborhood is populated with vegetarians and yoga shops and farm-to-table restaurants that only serve organic organic eggs harvested by Amish midwives. I mean, it really is one of those unique hipster neighborhoods. My mailman does tell me that I'm the only member of the National Rifle Association in the neighborhood, and that's understandable. Lived just a couple of blocks away from Hillary Clinton. Her campaign headquarters was in my neighborhood, and I have to tell you, on election night, oh my goodness, it was just such a peaceful sleep, listening to the wailing and the gnashing of teeth from the nearby neighborhoods as her supporters just ran into the streets and threw themselves onto the ground. It was also where Bernie Sanders, and you guys might remember Bernie Sanders, everybody's favorite socialist, who owns multiple homes. Bernie had a rally in our neighborhood, and I thought, you know, this would be kind of fun to go check out a socialist rally. So I I went and asked my neighbor, I said, where is the Bernie Sanders rally? And he said, I don't know, but just follow the smell of marijuana smoke and patchouli. So sure enough, I did, and there it was. I mean, just you could, it was like a little trail, like, you know, Hansel and Gretel. And so there they were. It was Bernie Sanders and just thousands and thousands of these little socialists. And I noticed they were selling T-shirts. And I thought to myself, wow, those are really clever T-shirts. And I thought, I'm going to go buy one of those T-shirts. I'm going to get a T-shirt. So I went up to the guy, and I realized I didn't have my wallet with me. So I just told the fellow, I said, I want you to give me one of your T-shirts. He said, well, it's $20. I said, well, I don't have $20. I said, I want your T-shirt. He says, well, you got to pay for the T-shirt. I said, but I don't have a T-shirt. You got a T-shirt. I want your T-shirt. I said, isn't that what socialism is all about? And I didn't get the T-shirt. I had never seen so much capitalism going on at a socialist rally. It was just really quite remarkable. You know, I believe that faith and freedom go hand in hand. You know, really from the early days of our great nation, that has been a truth. I tell a story in my book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, about a pastor in Charleston, South Carolina. Of course, Charleston was a crucial place in the Revolutionary War. Without South Carolina, it would have been impossible to defeat the British. But they were having a difficult time in the upstate of the Carolinas recruiting an army to fight the British. So there was a man by the name of Oliver Hart. He was a Baptist. I'm a Baptist. I believe God is a Baptist. But that's for another day. He was a Baptist minister from the northern states, and he came down and he became the pastor of the First Baptist Church of Charleston, South Carolina. And this Oliver Hart was sort of like Tony Perkins. You know, if Tony Perkins was like there during the Revolutionary War, this is who he would have been, because he was a bold communicator. And he stood in the pulpit and he talked about issues involving politics. He talked about issues involving freedom and liberty. I mean, these are things that you won't hear in modern day pulpits here in America that much. Well, word of his communication skills reached a delegation of our founding fathers. And so they sent some men down to South Carolina, and they asked him if he would consider going out into the countryside and helping to recruit an army to fight the British. And he did. And that's exactly what happened. I find it interesting, and I mentioned this in the book, I find it interesting that when it came time to fight for our freedom, the founding fathers came to the church house first. I just think that was pretty interesting. I think there's a lesson for us here in modern day America. By the way, you know, I mentioned to you the name of the book. I probably should have thanked Hillary for the title in the acknowledgments. But we were not quite sure what was going to happen. The book was coming whoever won. It didn't matter if Hillary won or if Donald Trump won, there was going to be a book. And so the other title, this is the actual title of the book, if Hillary had won, it was called We're Doomed America, Your Guide to a Happy Apocalypse. So that was the original title of the book. You know, for the past 8 years, Americans have been told that we are the problem, that we are not a Christian nation, that we are not an exceptional nation. Our traditions and our values have been ridiculed and marginalized. We've been mocked by Hollywood and dismissed by the academics. We were marginalized by the mainstream media, bullied and belittled by the sex and gender revolutionaries. But all of that changed on Election Day with a man who promised to defend religious liberty, a man who promised to make America great again. Now, I have to tell you this, and this is a confession. Confession is good for the soul. Get those likes across now. Confession is good for the soul. Donald Trump was not my first choice, or my second choice, or my third or fourth choice in the Republican primary. But on Election Day, he was the only choice. And I believe that Hillary Clinton and that speech she gave in New York City about the basket of deplorables, I believe that was one of the turning points in the 2016 presidential race. I believe that many people finally realized what the Democratic Party really thought about folks who cherish traditional values, who cherish American sovereignty, who believe in things, the ideals like traditional marriage. And it wasn't just so much that she thought we were deplorable, but she thought we were irredeemable. They were telling us that our belief system is so egregious that we are beyond redemption. Many conservatives, though, I think understood what was at stake on Election Day. And for me, and I suspect there are many folks out there who feel the same way, for me, the Supreme Court was the issue that compelled me to go and vote and compelled you to go and vote on Election Day. Now, let's talk about that, because the Supreme Court, Franklin Graham said we were at a moral tipping point. We know that the Supreme Court was going to be lost, not just for an election cycle, but for generations. So how is the president doing so far? Well, contrary to the reporting of those in the fake news, we are still a sovereign nation. We haven't nuked anybody. We haven't been invaded by aliens from another galaxy. And Donald Trump has made overtures to defend religious liberty. He's protected the unborn. And his Supreme Court pick, Neil Gorsuch, is a solid choice. And I believe that we have the best vice president in generations. You know, Mike Pence, I've got to say something about Mike Pence. A couple of days ago, the Washington Post did what was supposed to be a puff piece on Mrs. Pence, and it turned out to be a hit piece on the vice president. And the basic thrust of this article was that Mike Pence was faithful to his wife, as if that was a bad thing. I'm reading this story, and they were shocked to hear that Mike Pence follows the Billy Graham principle, or the Billy Graham rule, where you don't have a meal or you're not in a room alone with a woman who is not your wife. In other words, he did not want to be in a situation that might compromise his integrity. That is a good thing, Washington Post. So here's my thought about this. Who would you rather be married to, ladies? Someone like Mike Pence or, God forbid, Bill Clinton? I mean, just think about it, okay? I think a lot of folks would prefer Mike Pence. So I say good job, Mr. President. And if he's watching our Facebook livecast, because he could be, I mean, in the morning time he's watching Fox and Friends, but he could be freed up right now. There's just a piece of advice I'd like to give the president. The Freedom Caucus is your friend.
You've been listening to a special edition of Washington Watch today. We're glad you're tuning in. Today we're looking back at a lecture given at the Family Research Council featuring our good friend Todd Starnes. Todd shared about his newest book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again. In it, he highlights what Christians can do to make a positive and lasting impact upon our nation. In fact, talks a little bit about what we do here at the Family Research Council with our culture impact teams. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. And by the way, stay with us because we've got more of Todd Starnes on the other side of this break. Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit tonyperkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
America's primed for change. In Washington, a new administration is in place, and opportunity is the new buzzword in the nation's capital. The question is, what will we do with the moment that's before us? What changes can conservatives make to undo the past 8 years? Join us at the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C., where you'll be informed and mobilized to protect religious liberty, champion life, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. This action-packed conference is one you won't want to miss. Past speakers at the event include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Senators Ted Cruz and Tim Scott, Speaker Paul Ryan, Michelle Bachmann, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Sean Hannity, Phil Robertson, and many more. Mark your calendar for October 13th through 15th and join us in Washington. Register now at the early bird rate of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
It's no secret that many members of the media are clueless where it comes to the essential role religion plays in our society. At a time when faith and religious liberty are the subject of much debate, this is a big cause for concern. This lack of understanding raises the question, can politics and current events be written about without the aid of religious context? Can the American media faithfully carry out its duty to tell the whole story if it does not grasp the rich culture of faith that surrounds its content? In an important talk, Michael Cromarty of the Ethics and Public Policy Center uses as his foundation the idea that there is hardly any story in the news today that is not somehow related to religion. Using his unique perspective on the American media's interaction with matters of faith, he also delves into the practical way in which his Faith Angle Forum is helping to bridge the media and religion divide. Visit frc.org/mediaandreligion to view this talk and many more. That's frc.org/mediaandreligion.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, but today we have a special edition of Washington Watch. We're listening to Todd Starnes, our good friend at FoxNews.com. He was at the Family Research Council recently lecturing about his new book, The Deplorables Guide to Making America Great Again. Todd's always fantastic, but he is at his best. So tune in. Here's Todd at the Family Research Council talking about his new book, The Deplorables Guide to Making America Great Again.
And I would be very cautious about aligning with establishment Republicans. I'm not quite sure they have the interest of this administration at heart. And in the vernacular of The Godfather, one of my favorite movies of all time, I'm afraid Speaker Ryan could end up pulling a Fredo before it's all said and done. So Google that if you don't know what Fredo is. But we still, you know, as a good of a job as President Trump is doing so far, we know that he is not going to do everything that we as conservatives, we as evangelicals, people of faith want him to do. And there is still a very grim landscape across the fruited plain. And over the next few moments, I want to share with you some of the concerns I have about the state of American values and religious liberty. You see, far too many Christians and far too many Christian leaders have disengaged from the fight. They avoid discussing issues surrounding the culture war because they fear they might offend someone. And I've seen this time and time again. I've called pastors wanting to get a comment from a story, a situation happening in their towns, and they do not want to engage. You see, evangelical Christians have pretty much been silenced, but they've been silenced by their own hand. You see, many bought into this wrong-headed notion that we should only practice our faith inside the walls of our church. That's not in the Constitution. And now there is a prevailing belief among many Democrats, and believe it or not, some Republicans, that Christianity should be eradicated from the public marketplace. John Stone Street addressed this issue in a brilliant Breakpoint commentary titled, "You Really Want Us to Keep Our Faith to Ourselves?" And he imagined what a world would look like without Christianity's influence. Listen, I'm going to read this, what he wrote. For one thing, we wouldn't have thousands of volunteers in prisons to help incarcerated men and women return to their communities as productive citizens. We'd see fewer hospitals, fewer free clinics. After all, I've seen a lot of Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran, Catholic hospitals, but I can't remember any Buddhist or atheist or New Age hospitals, or for that matter, food kitchens or rescue missions or adoption agencies or disaster relief organizations. And good luck sustaining free public education to the millions of students once religious schools are shut down. When Christians keep it to themselves, everybody loses. An associate professor of law and political science at Washington University School of Law in St. Louis warned that Christians who have avoided the culture wars may no longer have that choice. And he referenced the 2015 Supreme Court ruling that redefined marriage. Again, the Supreme Court redefining what God defined. And he pointed to an amicus brief filed by a religious freedom expert, Douglas Laycock. By the way, Mr. Laycock argued in favor of gay marriage. So just keep that in mind for a moment. Here's what he said. Must pastors, priests, and rabbis provide religious marriage counseling to same-sex couples? Must religious colleges provide married student housing to same-sex couples? Must churches and synagogues employ spouses in same-sex marriages, even though such employees would be publicly flouting the religious teachings they were hired to promote? Must religious organizations provide spousal fringe benefits to the same-sex spouses of any such employee they do hire? And he goes on and on and on and on. And his point is that people of faith, people who cherish religious liberty, are in danger of losing that religious liberty. And that comes from a pro-gay marriage religious liberty advocate. Just last year, the chairman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights warned that religious exemptions involving issues regarding sexual orientation and gender identity would significantly infringe upon civil rights, which is important based on what happened with the federal court ruling yesterday, including sexual orientation in civil rights. And here's what Martin Castro wrote. The phrase religious liberty and religious freedom will stand for nothing except hypocrisy so long as they remain code words for discrimination, intolerance, racism, sexism, homophobia, Islamophobia, Christian supremacy, or any other form of intolerance. It's just like Hillary's basket of deplorables all over again. So now you understand why it is imperative that Christians take a stand to defend religious liberty, because the fight goes on. Even though Donald Trump is in the White House, the fight goes on. You know, religious liberty is our first freedom. And I've often said that if the secularists are allowed to undermine our first freedom, every other freedom we have is in jeopardy. Look at the Pew Research Study. They interviewed, polled millennials. 40% of millennials in America believe there should be limitations placed on free speech. Look at what they're doing to gun control in this country. Every single one of our rights is now in jeopardy. You know, we have to look at the military turned into a social engineering petri dish under the Obama administration. The other day, I received an email from an airman at Lackland Air Force Base. And let me stop here for a second and tell you that most of the stories, a lot of people ask me, Todd, where do you get all these crazy stories? Well, a lot of folks send them to me. And sure enough, we have a lot of military personnel that follow our column and our Facebook page, and they confidentially send me these documents. We check them out, and if we're able to verify their authenticity, we do a story. And sure enough, this email from an airman at Lackland Air Force Base, they were telling the officers, don't say offensive words like boy or girl or colonial. Or you people. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
You've been listening to a special edition of Washington Watch with our good friend, Todd Starnes at FoxNews.com. And we'll continue as he talks about his new book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, when we return here on Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad you're along with us today.
America's primed for change. In Washington, a new administration is in place, and opportunity is the new buzzword in the nation's capital. The question is, what will we do with the moment that's before us? What changes can conservatives make to undo the past 8 years? Join us at the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C., where you'll be informed and mobilized to protect religious liberty, champion life, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. This action-packed conference is one you won't want to miss. Past speakers at the event include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Senators Ted Cruz and Tim Scott, Speaker Paul Ryan, Michelle Bachmann, Laura Ingraham, Kirk Cameron, Sean Hannity, Phil Robertson, and many more. Mark your calendar for October 13th through 15th and join us in Washington. Register now at the early bird rate of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
One of the great freedoms that most Americans enjoy is the ability to get involved in political campaigns. But what about pastors? Unfortunately, due to a little-known amendment that was passed in 1954 at President Lyndon Johnson's urging, churches and other nonprofit organizations are prohibited from making statements for or against a candidate for public office if they want to remain tax-exempt. This is just one of the many problems with the Johnson Amendment. Not only does fear of IRS action put a chill on the free speech of pastors, it restrains other nonprofit organizations from participating in the debate of public policy in their area of expertise. In addition, the IRS only rarely enforces the Johnson Amendment, causing widespread confusion about what constitutes lawful political speech and what doesn't. For more information on how to amend the Johnson Amendment, visit frc.org/Johnson Amendment. That's frc.org/Johnson Amendment.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Hope you're making plans now to attend church this Sunday. It is Resurrection Sunday. Great time for families to get together. I know I hope you're going to church every Sunday, but if for some reason you just happen to be catching this program, let me encourage you to find a local church and be there, especially if you've got family and kids. Make sure you take them to church. In fact, if you are in the Baton Rouge area, I welcome you to join us at Greenville Springs Baptist Church out in central Louisiana, just outside of Baton Rouge. I'll be preaching this Sunday, so come be my guest at Greenville Springs Baptist Church, 8 o'clock a.m. and 10:30 a.m. To find out more, go to greenwellsprings.com. All right, we've been listening to a lecture by our good friend Todd Starnes with FoxNews.com talking about his new book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again. Here's Todd.
There was a training briefing a few years ago that labeled the biggest threats of domestic extremism were coming from Roman Catholics and evangelical Christians. And of course, the good people sitting here in this room, you guys were labeled a domestic hate group in another email that was sent out by the military. I don't think y'all are a hate group. Y'all are very nice, very pleasant people. So you had a whole table of Baptist martinis out there. So. Now, for you Lutherans, that's a Diet Coke, so don't freak out. So, yeah, anyway. But we are seeing these attacks in the military, and they're still going on. We've got to put a stop to it. Now, I have high hopes that General Mad Dog Mattis is going to root out this anti-Christian hostility that's infested the Pentagon. Radical Islam is another area that we talk about in the book, and the rise of radical Islam, we're seeing in our public schools where Islam is being given accommodation and Christianity is being marginalized. Just a couple of days ago, two moms from New Jersey filed a lawsuit against their school district. And the reason why is that their children were being indoctrinated on the Islamic faith inside a middle school classroom. They actually had the children reciting the Islamic conversion prayer. I mean, how would you like that? You're walking by your kid's classroom or bedroom at night, and they're praying, you know, to Allah. You know, what the heck is going on there in New Jersey? And I got to tell you something. You really don't want to mess with the New Jersey moms. I mean, Southern moms, they have the cast iron skillets, but the New Jersey moms, you know, Yeah, they don't have cast iron skillets, but they're still pretty fierce. So we'll see how this lawsuit goes. But thank goodness for those moms. Because you see, instead of just dismissing it, instead of turning the other way, these moms took a stand. They took their concerns to the school board. And when the school board did not adequately address their concerns, they went out there and they got a lawyer from one of the religious liberty law firms. And they're fighting this. And that's what we have to do. We have to engage the culture. You know, I've got a column coming out later today, and you can read it at foxnews.com. There's a public school up in New York, near Syracuse, and a couple of students were involved in this college-level course. And they were trying to get the children to think critically. And so the teacher told the students, you have to defend the Holocaust. They told these students that they divided the group in half, and they told this side of the group, you have to defend exterminating Jews. Well, as you can imagine, a couple of these students were rather shocked by that and disgusted by that. So what did those kids do? Instead of following through with the assignment, they objected. And they took their concerns to the teachers and the administrators. And when they did not answer them, they took their concerns to the media. And then they took it to the State Board of Education. And just yesterday, the State Board of Education said, you know what? This was inappropriate. We should not have been teaching this in the classroom. Guess who was able to accomplish that, to eradicate that lesson plan? Two kids who bothered to take a stand. Now, I don't know if those kids are Jewish or Christian, or maybe they're not of any faith at all. It doesn't matter because they took a stand. They saw wrongdoing and they took a stand. Because far too long, we have been taught to stay silent in the face of this nonsense. And quite frankly, they need to go back and they need to fire every administrator, every person that was involved, any person who thought it was a good idea to teach kids that kind of garbage. But it's not just in the public schools. We're also seeing this in the workplace. And you guys know the stories of the Baronelle Stutzmans and the Kelvin Cochrans. I want to tell you about another family that you might not have heard about. They didn't get the national publicity. They're the Vanderboon family. Donald and Ellen Vanderboon, they own a meatpacking company near Grand Rapids, Michigan. I don't know the Vanderboons, but they sell beef, so they got to be good people. And they run the West Michigan Beef Company. Now, during the Obama administration, a USDA inspector came into the Vanderboon's business. Now, this is a privately owned business. And the Vanderboons happened to be devout Christian people. And there was some religious material there in the break room. Well, the USDA inspectors came by and said, hey, we need to have a word with you in your office. So the government agents escorted Mr. Vanderboon to his office in his privately owned business. And they said, you got to get rid of those religious materials. They're offending our meat inspectors. And if you don't remove those documents...
You're listening to a special edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad you're with us today. We've been listening to Todd Starnes with FoxNews.com talking about his new book, The Deplorables Guide to Making America Great Again. We're going to finish on the other side of this break, so don't go away. You don't want to miss Todd as he closes up talking about his book, Horrible's Guide to Making America Great Again. That's next here on Washington Watch.
It's happening everywhere and not just in blue states. Radical LGBT activists are forcing potentially dangerous policies on schools, businesses, and other public places, violating the safety and privacy of women and threatening religious freedom. How can churches help protect their community and be a voice for the vulnerable on these issues? What can state legislators do to push back against local ordinances and federal efforts to allow men into girls' showers, restrooms, and locker rooms? What can parents and voters do? In a special one-hour program, FRC President Tony Perkins is joined by Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, and others, including experts and victims, to talk about what some states are doing to protect the safety and privacy of women and children and to defend the freedom to believe. Visit frc.org/privacy to view this event and many more.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council, inviting you to join me, my wife, Luana, along with General Jerry Boykin and other special guests on our first ever Free to Believe Alaska cruise from July 29th to August the 5th. We'll sail from Seattle on Holland America's luxurious MS Yuridam, known for impeccable five-star service and incomparable cuisine. Some of the most breathtaking beauty in God's creation will surround you as you rest, relax, and worship. You'll witness stunning wildlife and the majestic scenery of Glacier Bay and relive Gold Rush history and classic frontier towns. And you'll hear the latest updates from Washington on the new administration and Congress. Come fellowship with other like-minded believers and journey with us on a vacation that will enrich your body, mind, and soul. For more information, call 844-872-5155 or visit TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss out. The number of cabins is limited. Again, that's 844-872-5155 or TonyPerkins.com.
When you think of hot-button issues, what comes to your mind? For most of America's history, religious liberty was fairly uncontroversial. Not anymore. What happened? I'm Travis Weber, director of the Center for Religious Liberty at Family Research Council. Religious liberty is now a heated issue, right alongside topics like abortion and sexual identity. It's often placed in quote marks in news stories, as if there's more going on than really meets the eye. But what does religious liberty really mean, and why is it so controversial? The public discussion of what was once a tame topic is now a point of sharp division. How did we reach this point? A new FRC brochure entitled Religious Liberty, An Introduction to Our Freedom to Believe, simplifies this complex issue in an easy-to-read format. Discover the true meaning of religious liberty, who is affected by it, why it's being infringed, why you should care, and what you can do about it. You will find answers to these common questions at frc.org/religious liberty.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and this is a special edition of Washington Watch. We have our good friend Todd Starnes talking about his new book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again. He gave this message just recently at the Family Research Council, and I wanted to share it with you. Here's Todd as he wraps up his time with us, talking about his book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again.
And if you don't remove those documents, we're going to remove our inspectors. Now, I didn't know a lot about the meatpacking business, but apparently, if you don't have meat inspectors there, you can't operate your business. And so Mr. Vanderboom was faced with the decision, do you keep those materials there in the break room? And if you do, what are you going to do? What are you going to tell those 45 employees that are going to be unemployed? So he removed the materials, Mr. Vanderboom did. He's raised complaints with the government. He hasn't gotten any answers, which is why many organizations, including FRC and the American Family Association, have been urging President Trump to sign an executive order protecting religious liberty. We have to protect people like the Vanderboons and the Baron L. Stutzmans of the world. We have to do that. And so I'm really hoping the president does the right thing, and he's going to have a lot of pressure from members of his own family. So we have to encourage the president to do the right thing and save religious liberty, and quite frankly, save American jobs. You know, President Reagan said freedom is just one generation away from extinction, and last year we came pretty close. As I mentioned early on, Franklin Graham said we were at a moral tipping point. But I believe that God saw fit to give our country a second chance. I just believe that. You know, one of the key indicators of what happened last election cycle, it didn't get a lot of attention in the mainstream media, but Franklin Graham held prayer gatherings on the steps of every single state capitol in this country. No politicians allowed to speak. They could come and pray in the audience, but they weren't allowed on that platform. And I believe that God's people came together, and we prayed, and we mobilized. And it's an interesting thing, but when people of faith stand together, when we break down those denominational walls, when the Baptists and the Catholics and the Presbyterians and the Pentecostals, everybody stands together, we are a mighty voice. But you see, I have hope for America because of the young Christian men and women who are growing up in this country. I have hope in America because of a young man named Connor Brewer. Now, Connor was a football player at Millikan University. He's a big old fella. His teammates decided to protest the national anthem by remaining inside the locker room. But Connor chose to stand. And sure enough, when it came time to play the national anthem, the football team ran off to their designated safe space there in the locker room. And Connor stood alone on the sidelines as they played the national anthem. Somebody took a picture of that moment and sent it to us, and we told Connor's story to the nation. And I have hope because of a young man named Alex Dunn of Fayetteville, North Carolina. His teacher tried to set the American flag on fire inside the classroom. And when the flag would not burn, the teacher threw the flag on the floor. But Alex is a young patriot. His father serves in our military. And Alex, a 16-year-old boy, jumped to his feet in that classroom and ran up and snatched the flag off the floor and delivered it to the front office so it could be disposed of properly because it had been desecrated. But this young man took a stand. And I have hope in our nation because of a young cheerleader in Madison, Mississippi. Now, I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, grew up right across the state line in DeSoto County, Mississippi, and I'm mighty proud of the Magnolia State. You see, last year, a federal judge appointed to the bench by President Obama told this public school that they would not be allowed to do anything remotely connected to religion. And if, in fact, it was if it was perceived to be religious, every violation would result in a $10,000 fine. Well, it turned out that that particular year, the high school marching band was doing a presentation of the song How Great Thou Art, which is a favorite song in the Baptist hymnal. I'm not sure about your church, but it's a big song in the Baptist world, especially Mississippi. Everybody's a Baptist in Mississippi. Even the Catholics are Baptists there. Well, the principal was pretty good at math, so he tallied up the number of kids in the marching band, and he multiplied by 10,000, and he realized we don't have enough in the petty cash to pay the fine. So we called the kids to the front office, and he delivered the news. He said, kids, you can't perform your halftime show. We can't risk the judge coming in and saying that's a violation of the law. You can't play that song. You can't play your halftime routine. Well, Friday night came, and Madison, Mississippi, and it was a warm, humid night under the bright lights of that football stadium. And halftime, the players run off to the locker rooms, and there was a very eerie silence that sort of settled over the field. Nobody knew what to do. There was no marching band on the field. Suddenly, there was a voice. It was a little girl, a cheerleader, and she put down her pom-poms, and she started singing a familiar tune. Oh, Lord, my God, when I in awesome wonder. And soon, one by one, moms and teachers and hairdressers, there was a police officer, everybody started standing to their feet. And soon the entire stadium was filled with people singing that song in defiance of their government. But they took a stand together in Madison, Mississippi. They took a stand for religious liberty. And I believe it is spreading like wildfire across this fruited plain. You see, Bonhoeffer once said that silence in the face of evil is evil itself. Not to speak is to speak. Not to act is to act. And I do believe that this is a Bonhoeffer moment for every Bible-believing Christian in America. You see, God's little lambs can no longer be silent. We are to be civil lambs, but we cannot be silent lambs. There's a scene in this wonderful film. I'm a huge movie buff. And there's a scene in this movie called We Were Soldiers, starring Mel Gibson. And it was a telling of the Battle of the Lodring Valley. And it was a pretty desperate situation. Lieutenant Colonel Hal Moore, who just went to be with the Lord recently, was there. His men were surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of the enemy. Joe Galloway was there, a reporter with United Press International. He was caught in the melee, and when the bullets started flying, the reporter dropped to the ground. Well, about that time, in the middle of all this chaos and all of this carnage, there was a sergeant major by the name of Basil Plumley, and he stood resolute. And I would pretty much expect anyone named Basil Plumley to stand resolute. And he walked over to that quivering reporter on the ground, and he gave him a swift kick with his boot. And he said, "You can't take no pictures from down there, sonny." And then he tossed the reporter a rifle. And the reporter rejected the weapon. He said, I'm a noncombatant. And that old crusty sergeant major looked at that journalist and said, "There ain't no such thing today." And I believe that we are in a very similar situation. You see, the cultural bullets are flying. The enemies of freedom are advancing, and the time has come for all of us to stand resolute. Now, you might say, "Todd, I'm not a fighter." Well, there ain't no such thing today, because we are freedom's last line of defense. So I say this: do not hide liberty's light under a bushel. No, hold it high, and let the flame of freedom burn bright for all the world to see. You see, I believe, and as I write in my book, I believe it's time for every gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American to take a thunderous stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thank you very much.
Todd, I have a question for you. For the individual who reads the book and post-election realizes that their votes, their voice, their influence makes a difference, and who reads your book, what would you tell them to do now that they realize that the landscape in some respects is still fairly grim? What would you tell them to do?
Well, we have to get involved. And one of the things that I heard from our readers, my last book was Godless America. And that really was, this is the evidence, folks. This is what's happening to your country. And a lot of folks were saying, okay, well, what do we do? Well, that's the point of the Deplorables Guide. After every chapter, we have very practical things, marching orders, things that you can do that do not cost any money at all. I'll give you an example. I think one of the crucial places that we have to fight back is in our public school system, because the liberals are using it against us. The secularists are using our public schools against us. So I think moms and dads need to get involved. Franklin Graham said we need to have Christians running for school board in every city, every town in America. I agree with that. But beyond that, one of the issues is Common Core, and especially the teaching of American history. And I believe every parent in America needs to take personal responsibility for teaching their children about American history and government. Teach your kids about the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. And you know what? Going to Disney World is great. That's a lot of fun. But why not take a vacation to, say, historical Williamsburg, or walk the Freedom Trail in Boston? Bring history, American history, alive for your kids.
My question is, has it come to a time for us Christians to respond? I'll give you two quick examples. North Carolina, the NCAA doesn't want to have basketball games there. Do we all lock arms and say we're not going to watch NCAA basketball for a year or two? Georgia, they don't want to have a religious freedom bill. The NFL doesn't want to have the Super Bowl there. Do we all lock arms as a church and say we're not going to watch football for a year or two? And for me personally, that'd be painful, but hasn't it come to that point in time where if we don't respond, they're just going to keep doing the same thing over and over again?
Well, I think that's a great question. You know, I've never been a huge proponent of boycotts. There are some things that I will say, you know what, I'm not going to tell you what to do with your dollar, but here's what I'm going to do with mine. So I think those decisions are made individually. But you raise an interesting point with North Carolina, because, you know, the NCAA is now going to, you know, reconsider going back into the state. It would be interesting to see what happens if Christians would, in fact, boycott those basketball games for a couple of seasons. And again, do what they're doing to the states, you know, those like big business in Georgia, you know, Coca-Cola, those companies were putting the screws to the governor there. By the way, the NCAA, and maybe somebody from the NCAA is watching here. Why are you guys so obsessed with having grown men in the bathrooms with little girls? I'm just kind of curious. So we called your press person, and he didn't answer us yesterday. So I'm just kind of curious.
What can Americans do to combat the fake media? I mean, the entire, we call it the mainstream media, but it really isn't anymore, and yet they still wield incredible influence.
Yeah, it's, you know, I for one thing, you should watch Fox News and read my website. We have a lot of great stories there. You know, it's important. You are a news consumer, and you have a responsibility to make sure that that you're getting your information from reliable sources. One of the things I do is I read the New York Times. I read the Washington Post, USA Today. And it gives you some semblance of what may or may not have happened. But when you read all those, you know, all those stories together, you sort of figure it all out. That's a problem, you know, and journalism has a big, big problem. I'm a commentator now, so I get to give my opinion. But unfortunately, a lot of reporters are giving their opinions in news stories. And that is a big, big problem. We were doing a book signing in Wichita, and this couple came up to me, it was a couple of weeks ago, and they said, Todd, my husband and I, we gave up Fox News for Lent. And I thought, oh my gosh, you poor people. And she, and the husband says, you don't know the half of it, we're thinking about converting. So anyway, I'm not sure that's a good reason to convert, but I sympathize.
I just wanted to make a comment on the Mike Pence situation, and maybe you'd comment, and maybe you'd write about this someday. I just had two things that I saw in it. First of all, almost every month in this country now, we see another story of a school teacher having sex with a student, both male and female. So the thought was, you know, wouldn't it be nice if school teachers adopted the Mike Pence policy that I'm not going to be alone with a student? And then we see in the sports culture, especially young male athletes that troll and take advantage of women, here's a man in a position of power who chooses not to in any way reflect badly on his wife. So I was just, your thoughts on that?
No, I think that's a great point. You know, I think our biggest issue in this country is we are in need of revival. And I remember when I was a kid growing up in the 70s, who knew the 70s were the good old days, but we would gather around our TVs, you know, we had our, three channels plus PBS, and I remember when Billy Graham would have his crusades, and it would actually be broadcast during prime time. They would interrupt programming, you know, in the evening so people could sit in front of their TV sets. It was like the whole country kind of went to church together, you know, had a revival service together. And I think that we need to have something like that happen again. You know, I think there needs to be an understanding that our country is founded on Judeo-Christian values and concepts, flavors every single document that that we've got, every single one of our founding documents. And let's face it, that's what makes us different from every other country on the face of the earth. So just something for us to consider as we pray about where we're going as a country. Family Research Council, thank you so very much.
Well, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you found this lecture with Todd Starnes to be both informative, inspiring, and, yes, Todd is entertaining as well. I do hope you'll tune in again tomorrow for more Washington Watch. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.